Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Ector, Midland County's COVID positivity rates rising, by Royal McGregor. CDC data shows that COVID positivity rates in Ector and Midland County have risen to more than 42% during the last 7 days. Ector County's positivity rate is at 42.91%, an increase of 11.17%, while Midland County's positivity rate is 45.78%, as it rose by 8.61%. During those 7 days, COVID numbers in Ector County reached 2,029, while Midland County was at 2,989. The Midland County COVID numbers were provided by the City of Midland Health Department. It's safe to assume that the increase in number of hospitalizations is a direct reflection of the increase in positivity rate in the community, Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief of Staff Dr. Rohit Saravana said during a phone interview. We can see we have a very high positivity rate. Midland Memorial Hospital held a Zoom conference on Tuesday morning about COVID numbers increasing. MMH President and CEO Russell Meyer said there were 88 COVID patients at Midland Memorial Hospital. Myers also said 70% of the COVID patients are unvaccinated, while 6% had a booster. At 30%, that's about the highest percentage of vaccinated people we've seen in a while, Meyer said. For the first time, we looked close at who had a booster shot, and of those inpatients, only 6% had a booster. Saravana and Meyer each said the cause of the uptick of COVID patients is due to the Omicron variant. Saravana said in ORMC there were between 5 to 10 patients with COVID in the hospital in November and December, but that number has doubled during the last 2 weeks. Myers explained the transmissibility of Omicron has been much higher than it was with the Delta variant. Myers also said that he doesn't have the data to prove it's the Omicron variant passing through Midland County, but he said all signs point to that being the case. We can't prove that in Midland, Myers said, about the dominant variant being Omicron. The only way that variants are identified is by sending samples to a state lab. That state lab is now 2 months behind in getting results. We just got results from November 1st. We aren't going to get current data on which variant we are dealing with, but all indications are that we should assume that it's the Omicron variant and act accordingly, and we are doing so. Saravana said during the course of the last 2 years that the world has been battling COVID, that the medical community has found proven methods to slow the spread and limit its effects. The first of those methods is masking, while the second is being vaccinated. There are a few things in our arsenal that we have that we didn't have when this first showed up, Saravana said. The spread of respiratory illness can be slowed down dramatically by using proper protection. Face mask is a prime example of that. Vaccination prevents the severity of COVID. Through the Delta variant, we found that vaccinated people don't get sick as much. Through Omicron, we are seeing vaccinated people can get sick, but vaccinated people mostly aren't being hospitalized. Bathroom fan causes fire at UTPB by OA News. An electrical short in a bathroom fan caused a fire in Building 84 at University of Texas, Permian Basin, Tuesday. Communications manager Alexa Dunson said the fire started at 10:17 a.m. No injuries were reported. Four students live in the apartment, and they will be temporarily relocated while the unit is assessed. The fire caused minor damage to one bathroom. No time frame for renovation is known yet. Early voting starts next month by OA News. Early voting will run from February 14th through February 25th for the March 1st general joint primary election. Voters are welcome to call the elections office for location information. For Odessa, the number is 498-4030. You may also visit the webpage for the early voting schedules, election day vote centers, and sample ballots. For Ector County, visit tinyurl.com/88UEH3M5. For the Secretary of State, go to www.sos.state.tx.us. Basin PBS live on DirecTV stream by OA News. Basin PBS announced via press release on Tuesday that it is now live streaming on DirecTV Stream. A dedicated live channel for Basin PBS is already available to all local DirecTV Stream customers, supplemented with additional PBS on-demand programming. As viewer habits continue to evolve, PBS remains committed to making our award-winning national and local content available to all Americans across as many platforms as possible. This partnership will allow PBS and our member stations to expand our digital footprint and reach more viewers with content that inspires, educates, and entertains. Ira Rubenstein, PBS Chief Digital and Marketing Officer, stated in the press release, "Entertainment is personal and should serve every member of the household, which is why we're partnering with PBS to deliver DirecTV Stream customers more choice, more control, and more convenient way to access the content they care about most," Rob Thun, Chief Content Officer for DirecTV, stated in the press release. Relationships like this, one, ensure that on-demand contents from PBS favorites, including American Experience, Antiques Roadshow, Frontline, Great Performances, Masterpiece, and Nature are available to as many viewers as possible. Additionally, the PBS Kids channel has recently joined both the DirecTV Stream and DirecTV lineups, helping to extend the PBS mission of preparing young children for success in school and life through trusted educational media available anytime and anywhere. Station content is available on all station-branded PBS platforms, including PBS.org and PBSKids.org, as well as the PBS Video app and PBS Kids Video app, the press release detailed. Station members are also able to view an extended library of quality public television programming via Passport. UTPB lecturer to offer study on Lewis by Ruth Campbell. A longtime affinity for C.S. Lewis has led University of Texas Permian Basin English lecturer Clark Moreland to offer a 14-week study of the author and his writings. Called The Cross Before the Crown, An Introduction to the Practical Theology of C.S. Lewis, the studies will be held each Wednesday night starting January 12th at First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue in Midland. Times are 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. There will be 12 meetings through April 13th with a week off for spring break and Midland ISD intercession. Forgiveness, friendship, heaven, love, and many other topics will be covered. Activities will include discussions and producing a short piece of personal reflective writing at the end of the course. Coffee and snacks will be provided at each meeting. Moreland, who is also director of the Heimer Center for Engaged Teaching, started reading Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia as a youngster. In college, he picked up one of Lewis's apologetics books called The Problem of Pain. Moreland said it covers the central problem of how God can be benevolent, but at the same time allow for human suffering. I read that, and then I started reading everything else he wrote. It took me 10 years, but I think I've read everything. I found in Lewis a model of an academic who could balance my faith and my convictions with my intellectual quest, Moreland said. Lewis, born November 29, 1898, in Belfast, Ireland, now Northern Ireland, died November 22, 1963, in Oxford, England. Raised in the angelic church, Lewis became an atheist in his 20s, but returned to Christianity in his 30s, the Britannical website said. For Moreland and a lot of Christian academics around the world, Lewis became a model. He also is talked about by local clergies in their messages. He added that he's been talking about Martin Luther King for years at UTPB and published scholarships on him. But I've never done anything on Lewis like a study of Lewis here. He seeps into everything I do as a teacher here. When I am teaching, writing, I quote Lewis, his thoughts on originality and composition. He was an English tutor at Oxford. He was a professor of medieval and Renaissance literature at Cambridge. He was an academic. He was a writing teacher. He worked with students all the time. Whenever I talk about teaching prodigy, I bring in Lewis's thoughts about that. And of course, when we're talking about literature, particularly the literature that Lewis read and wrote about, I'll quote him. But I've never taught this class here, and I've been eager to do that, Moreland said. He didn't have an avenue for doing the class at UTPB. And then I remembered that there's a book of Lewis's sermons and speeches, mostly from World War II, called The Weight of Glory. That title is actually the title of his most famous sermon. But there's all sorts of other pieces in that little collection which cover a variety of different topics on life as a Christian. So I began thinking this could be a study, Moreland said. He thought it could be offered cafeteria style with different topics every week so people could pick and choose. Moreland added that every discipline teaches you how to read. So he thought he could offer that at his church as a way to engage people and enjoy getting to share Lewis and kind of crack open Lewis and show these great treasures that are there to get them past that initial stage of fear. That's what I'm going to try to do, he said.
This is the obituary column, Wednesday, January 12th, 2022. Cecilia Hidrogo Marez. Cecilia Hidrogo Marez of Midland began her eternal life with our Heavenly Father on January 7, 2022. She was born in Mexico on June 19, 1971. Cecilia is survived by her stepmother, Petra Marez, stepfather, Jorge Luis Varela, five brothers, Amador Marez, Givaldo, Anthony Bermia, and wife Brandy, Felix Bermia and Michael Bermia, two sisters, Sally Marquez and husband Javier, and Yolanda Horton and husband John, as well as many aunts, nieces, nephews, and cousins. Cecilia is reunited with her mother, Maria Santos Hidrogo, her father, Efren Marez, sisters Lucy and Lupita, brother Lupe, and grandparents Efren Marez Sr. and Jovita Esquivel Marez. Memorial service will be held Wednesday, January 12th at 10 a.m. in the chapel of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.asanchezfh.com. John Depew Labar III. John Labar, age 70, passed away on January 8th in Granbury, Texas. He was born July 3, 1951, in Douglas, Wyoming, to John Labar Jr. and Beatrice May Betty Anderson Labar. John was preceded in death by his daughter, Lisa Erin Labar, in 2002. He is survived by his wife, Linda Brosick Ford Labar, sister Catherine Heyman and husband Kenneth of Grand Junction, Colorado, sister Artie Labar of Midland, Texas. Also stepdaughters Jennifer Thompson and husband Rod, Heather Clark and husband Kelly, eight grandchildren, six great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held at Wiley Funeral Home in Granbury on Saturday. Joy Beth Hansen. Joy Beth Hansen, 89, of Midland, passed away Sunday, January 9th. She was born March 25, 1932, in Big Spring, Texas. She married Bobby Sam Hansen on February 19, 1953, and they celebrated 65 years of marriage together. Joy is survived by her two daughters, Pam Savant of Midland, Kim Polk and her husband Glenn of Cheyenne, Wyoming, two sisters, Betty Nell Payne of Midland, Kathy Platt of the Hills, Texas, one brother, Sammy Jones of Waco, one granddaughter and one great-granddaughter, as well as several nieces and nephews. A public visitation for Joy will be held Wednesday, January 12th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. A graveside service will occur Thursday, January 13th, at 11 a.m. at Resthaven Memorial Park. Expressions of sympathy may be made at www.ellisfunerals.com. Juan Vizcaino Dominguez. Juan Vizcaino Dominguez was born on December 30, 1949, in Manuel Benavides, Chihuahua, Mexico, and left this earth on January 8, 2022. He is survived by his four children, seven grandchildren, four great-granddaughters. Also left to cherish his memory is his one and only sister, Alicia Soto, and husband Umberto. Funeral Mass will be celebrated on Thursday, January 13th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe in Midland. Viewing will take place Tuesday, January 11th and Wednesday, January 12th at the branch at NPW, with rosaries both nights at 7. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Catherine Cassidy Baker. Catherine Kate C. Baker of Midland went to her heavenly home to meet her heavenly father on January 6th. Kate was born in Midland on August 27th, 1941. She is survived by her husband, Bill Baker, two daughters, Elisa Felix of Midland and Sheila Rice of Granbury. She also had four grandchildren and six great-grandchildren, as well as several cousins, nieces, and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents and her son, Joseph Cassidy. Viewing will be Wednesday, January 12th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. that evening, and Thursday, January 13th, from 9 a.m. to service time, at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be at St. Anne's Catholic Church on Thursday, January 13th at 12 p.m. Burial will follow at Resthaven Memorial Park. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Thomas Dowd Hostad. Dr. Thomas Hostad was born September 5, 1933, in Ryan, Oklahoma, to Leslie and May Hostad, and died January 3, 2022, in Odessa. He is survived by his wife Muriel, son Lowell and wife Kathy, daughter Leslie and her husband Dan Borwick. Grandchildren are Danny, Maya, Borwick, Sarah Holder, and Jonathan Hostad. Memorial concert to be announced. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens. To send condolences to the family, sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Joyce Marie Woodward Brickey. Joyce Marie Woodward Brickey, 84, of Midland, passed away January 8th. Family will have a private service. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Vernon Harkins. Vernon Harkins, 87, of Midland, passed away January 7th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, January 14th, at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, January 15th, at Seven Cities Church of Midland, with interment following at Resthaven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Non-embryo stem cell treatment. Dear Dr. Roach, many of my friends and I are considering knee replacement surgery, and in my case, want to delay it if possible. Are the non-embryo stem cell treatments effective in delaying surgery? These stem cell treatments use our own body fat to turn into fibroblasts that may repair our tendons and ligaments. Can we hope that these treatments work? Answer. We can certainly hope that these therapies work, but so far the evidence of their safety and effectiveness is not yet a point where I can recommend it. The theory is that the cells, which are commonly obtained from the person's own bone marrow, can help regrow a person's own cartilage, not so much tendons and ligaments. Just the cartilage that lines and protects the bone. That can delay or even prevent the knee for a knee replacement. The results so far have shown some benefit, but several reviews of all published studies have shown that the evidence is not high quality. The Food and Drug Administration considers this an experimental treatment, meaning nearly all insurers won't pay for it, and it is very expensive. Many people get knee replacements. The most common regret I have heard is that they wish they hadn't waited so long. More than 80% of knee replacements last 25 years.
This is the Dear Abby column. man's anger begins to boil over in everyday exchanges. Dear Abby, I am becoming more and more irritated with people. My fuse is short, and I'm prone to bursts of anger. Today, I watched another driver run a red light, and I proceeded to honk my horn, lower my window, and give the guy my middle finger. Yeah, I know it was risky, but I couldn't resist the impulse. I am sick of people. They are, in my opinion, self-centered, inconsiderate jerks who need to be smacked. Stupid questions also set me off. I have been snapping at my wife and kids, which is not something I intend. What can I do to get a grip on my temper and not act out the way I have been doing? Is something really wrong with me? Signed, Really a Nice Guy in Michigan. Dear Nice Guy, the season to be jolly has always been stressful, as is its aftermath when it's time to pay the bills. This last holiday season has been more stressful than most for any number of reasons. Anger is a normal emotion. Everyone experiences it from time to time. But lowering one's car window, playing the horn like a musical instrument, and giving other drivers the finger is not only unwise, but dangerous. These days, it could get you killed. For the record, a bad mood is not a valid excuse for taking it out on someone you think has asked a stupid question. If a question is sincere, no question is stupid. Your loss of self-control, if recent, could be related to frustration or misdirected anger or something out of your control. Does experiencing these feelings mean there is something wrong with you? Not necessarily, as long as you find ways to manage your emotions before exploding. We are all human. We all make mistakes. My booklet, The Anger in All of Us and How to Deal with It, offers suggestions for directing angry feelings in a healthy way. It contains suggestions for managing and constructively channeling anger in various situations. It can be ordered by sending your name and address, plus a check or money order for $8 to Dear Abby Anger Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Norris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. It takes self-control and maturity to react calmly instead of striking out in anger. Recognizing what is causing these negative emotions can go a long way to help you avoid taking them out on others. I sometimes wonder whether anger management should be added to school curriculums to help the next generation learn to communicate in a healthy manner rather than simply reacting. Dear Abby, my dear friend Francine loves male attention and flirts with men, married or unmarried, at parties and on other occasions. I don't think flirting with married men is proper because it sends the wrong message. I also don't think their wives appreciate her behavior. Am I off base? I would appreciate your input. Signed, Old Fashioned in Arizona. Dear Old Fashioned, your dear friend may do this not because she's trying to break up a marriage, but because she needs validation and wants to reassure herself that she is attractive. If the wives find her behavior a threat, they can tell her that themselves or exclude her from their gatherings. P.S. Is it proper? No. Does it happen? Quite often. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.